This is the Douglas Robin Show.
Welcome to the Den of Discussion. I'm your host, Douglas Robbins. Today, we are very lucky to have Noah Healy, who is an economy researcher and mathematician. Welcome, Noah. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me here.
All right, man. I want to get right at it. I know you have a great knowledge base about crypto and the traditional markets. Why does it seem that the traditional economy is rigged against us? And obviously it seems to be because laws and regulations all go towards the wealthy and sort of the middle class and poor seem to be making up for that with taxes, everything else. What would you say about the state of the economy?
Well, I think what we're currently coping with is a fundamental breakdown of the institutions and mechanisms that actually allowed the economy to function so well over the last eight centuries. Marketplaces are essentially large super mines that work by taking in you know, computer information systems, we think of as signals, and filtering noise out of those signals and providing a clearer signal about the nature of reality. And that is what Adam Smith was writing about with his invisible hand, this notion that an entire country of people who will never talk to each other, and in many cases are never even aware of each other's existence, can nonetheless carry out their own specializations in ways that interlock with each other to produce this circumstance of sort of general prosperity.
Can I interact or interject with someone? So the laissez-faire, hands off, let the capitalists run, let the market take care of itself. But isn't that a flaw in itself?
Well, so the major issue that we're having now is that even the pro argument for that, so there's social and political arguments on both sides of that system, but the system itself had a function in this information, you know, cleanup and promulgation system that helps out with things. That function itself is destroyed by the communication technology that computers enable. What happens in a circumstance that we have today, where marketplaces essentially cannot outpace their user base because everybody has access to the same computers, is that it's now not costly enough to provide false signals to the marketplace. And so the market is gone from sort of cleaning up, you know, like rainwater that washed down out of the mountains to cleaning up the sewage that's coming out of the city. And it's just not up to the task. And so what we're seeing is the parts of the system that could be able to work breaking down, and without the capacity of those of that sort of supermind to exist, we aren't smart enough to figure out how to run a system as complex as a society. There aren't human beings that have that degree of intellect.
The marketplace is, for lack of a better term, cold and calculated. It is not a conscientious environment such as, oh, we have 100-year-old industries that are now have been polluting for decades. And it's not built to handle such infrastructure failure.
Yeah. It's not only is it very present focused, but with modern computer technology, it's become so hyperly present focused that it's become highly unstable. And the more unstable it is, the more costly it is to insulate yourself from that instability. And that's where you get the sort of driving down of the standards of living that are now becoming much more commonly experienced with this recent spike in gas prices and so on.
But this had happened, I mean, 2008, 2009, it happened in, I think, the 90s, another recession. But I mean, the cost of food has gone up for years. I mean, if you notice, even cartons of milk used to be half a gallon. Now it's typically 52 ounces. Same with ice cream and everything else. The marketplace or the supply, the demand is obviously there. It's not, that's not going to change, but the supplying of it is, the goods have shrunk while as the costs have increased. And I'm wondering if this has anything to do with the deregulation of industries that started taking place in the 80s after Glass-Steagall started being, you know, pulled back. And for 40 years, if I recall correctly, there was no major heaving in the economy.
Well, so it's unfair to say that there was no major heaving in the economy. United States of America literally declared bankruptcy in the early 70s when Nixon took us off the gold standard and broke mm-hmm. the original Bretton Woods Agreement that had carried out post-World War II situation that took us off the gold standard. But the Glass-Steagall isn't helping with the exacerbation of the shift to computerization, which started really in the 80s for the financial industry. And the things that you're talking about, the sort of wild and crazy, you know, there was the 87, was that Black Monday. Then, yeah, there was the dot-com boom, the 2008. What we're seeing is marketplaces that are much less stable than they've been since the you know, time of like Newton and the tulip bulbs and stuff like that. Right. And what's going on is that the communication technology that we have means that these marketplaces actually won't be able to function. And so a regulatory response basically is completely impractical. The degree of regulatory intrusion that would be necessary to allow the markets we have to function would essentially remove the finance sector from human society. They would no longer be able to participate in the society that they were, to all intents and purposes, controlling. And there's no practical way to turn the banker class into a slave class and live with ourselves or them anymore. So
I think some people wouldn't mind living with that.
Well, lots of people, that's a very powerful political impetus, and certainly several revolutions have been based on that. The difficulty is that what those political revolutions largely achieve is shifting the occupancy of the banker class from the bankers to the politicians rather than actually enslaving them. And so the politicians are basically incompetent at finance, and they just screw everything up. So it's a natural, sadly, human instinct to go for things like that, and it's a strong possibility if we can't solve these issues for ourselves, because at the end of the day, power is more important than money in political dynamics. But it's not a good outcome. And we're stuck with it basically because of the technology. So, you know.
Well, what is the technology doing? Obviously, we're going through serious inflation right now. you know, the marketplace isn't great. The stock market is not doing well. What are you saying with technology? Is it the loss of jobs, the loss of industry?
Actually, it's really, really basic. It's down to information processing. Computers make data promulgation and processing very, very quick. But sort of data can be broken into two pieces of noise and information, just like energy can sort of be divided into heat and work. If you have a very efficient engine, then it produces very little heat and a lot of work. If you have a very inefficient engine, it produces tons and tons of heat and not very much work.
So our system is overheating.
Our system is becoming wildly inefficient because the computers have basically completely eliminated our institution's capacity to punish people for throwing sand in the gears.
Give me one example. Give me some simple example.
Okay. So trading in the marketplaces has shifted from a game that's essentially being privately played by wealthy individuals who can take care of themselves to one in which now, you know, teenagers have gotten in through like Robinhood and stuff like that to day trade instead of playing Mario Kart. Like, why not? It's basically the same. You press buttons and look at, you know, lights light up on the screen. But, you know, in Mario Kart, when you, you know, you get to see a really big number. Over in the stock market, when you see the really big number, it deposits in your bank account and you can go buy, you know, chewing gum or whatever it is you want to buy. So awesome. Well, okay. Let's say 90% of the people in the marketplace are now all talking to each other on Twitter. And as a meme, they decide to all buy one particular stock, say GameStop, for example.
Yes.
And then it just goes to the moon. Now, GameStop might be a great retail opportunity and it might be a dead end brick and mortar. I don't know the answer to that question. Neither does anybody else. And the shorts that they were crushing were taking advantage of a sort of previous iteration of that that had not gotten a lot of play, where a combination of some kind of shady internal regulation plus the same kind of thing happening in reverse but not getting front page news was allowing them to make a lot of money by, you know, all getting together and bidding something down instead of bidding something up.
Sure.
But the foundational force that's going on of the power of large numbers of independent agents, which in the modern world don't even have to be people, they can just be computers, to create this sort of tidal flow against which nobody can stand, means that the market's less stable. And the less stable the marketplace is, the more it has to charge for what it's doing. And so what we've been seeing over the last 40 years is that the financial sector as a fraction of the economy has been growing because it's dealing with more and more noise. However, the noise it's dealing with is essentially being provided by themselves. So you've got this situation of like fire insurance sellers who are arsonists as a sideline. And that's a formula for everything turning to ash, which is exactly the only place that they can take it.
So as it stands, it's being eroded, not so much because regular mom and pop can now trade themselves, but you're saying because it's easily manipulated by bots.
Yes. Well, and so that example is useful to understand because it got a lot of publicity because mom and pop were doing it.
Right.
But it's important to understand that that's the daily existence of trading in the marketplace, is having these sort of bot versus bot wars, mm-hmm. of the bots themselves behaving like that in conflicts that happen over the course of seconds.
But what's also fascinating about what happened with GameStop, and I probably don't know all the details, is the brokers were trying to basically drive it to its knees by short selling it, undervaluing it, and you know, and obviously not too many stores left in malls, et cetera. People aren't going to the mall. But so they were trying to drive it basically to extinction, short selling it. And then regular folk or common folk said, no, we're going to do the opposite. We're going to buoy it now by buying it. And my goodness, what did it go to, 200, 300?
Yeah. So, but the thing is, there's a much less well-known and far more critical story from the late 90s with long-term capital management. These guys who got the Econ Nobel invented this formula for valuing futures. It's called the Black-Scholes equation, which you may even have heard of. So they formed a hedge fund called Long-Term Capital Management that was doing what's called a carry trade. It's basically international currency flows. So what you do is you borrow money in one country, then you convert that money to a different country's currency, and you wait for the two currencies to shift mm-hmm. against each other. Then you reconvert back, pay off your loan, you know, at a very high level, this is how it works. And then because the country you converted to's currency appreciated, you make a profit out of that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, because these guys were the Nobel economists who invented the formula for predicting the future, they were allowed to lever that up to mm-hmm. such an extreme degree that they, very, very slightly exaggerating here, borrowed all the money in the world. And so they entered into a situation where they were on one side of the trade and basically everyone else on earth was on the other side of the trade.
Mm-hmm.
And their model was based on effectively the market never polarizing, it always being sort of normal with lots and lots of people on all sides of every trade. So once they'd gotten huge, their model, you know, the assumption was busted, and so it was broken, and things went sideways. Everyone in the world was just said, okay, pay us.
Yeah.
You say you've got all the money in the world, let's see it. Well, they didn't.
Yeah.
And they collapsed, and governments had to step in because there wasn't going to be money anymore, more or less. This was 1997.
Mm-hmm.
That happened.
Yeah.
Things like the dot-com boom and the global financial crisis got a lot more play in the media, but enormous, consequential, insane, destructive things have been happening every few years, and GameStop level craziness is, like I said, any 15 minutes of the marketplace, there's some robots that have played out, maybe even a dozen wars that are like that. And that can't get media play because our attention spans are too slow to deal with this stuff. And because the technology and computers will drive speeds and capacities upwards, those situations will become more and more frequent until we reach whatever the tripping point is that we can't sustain having these things in our economies. And then we will only have local economies. And unless you live in the tribal regions of Borneo or the upper Amazon or something else, you don't live with a purely local economy and probably can't.
Yeah.
So we need to solve the problem.
So is, crypto, let's talk about crypto for a moment, if that's
okay. Sure.
because that is or was designed in some ways to hedge against economic instabilities. But crypto, it hasn't really worked out that way.
Crypto focuses on one specific issue, primarily with governmental and quasi-governmental interference with currency valuation. Mm-hmm. So currency is a kind of money, and money is a unit of measurement in the economic space. Lots of different people, the crypto people are sort of the latest in a long line of people who basically claim that if you're going to have a unit of measurement, it should be steady in some way. Sure. There's like biblical passages about this. Mm-hmm. Not everybody thinks that. Criminals and con artists are very in favor of having shifting definitions for things. But in general, that's a pretty strong argument. Crypto basically says, well, we have this mathematical technology that's in pretty common use, like we're using it right now under the covers. This thing is doing side encryption of over the internet. Mm-hmm. It's saying, well, like that thing that creates this sort of trusted communication network exists. What if we built this problem on top of that technology so that trust itself would be the outcome of a computation? That has both philosophical and technological issues, but it also has political and social issues. And the crypto people at best focus on the technological issues rather than all the other ones. And you were referring to a previous podcast. My point is that even if the dollar was absolutely rock solid, which it absolutely is not, or if we suddenly converted to the gold standard or the iridium standard or you know, some element that we had a finite amount of and couldn't make very much more of, or shifted to Bitcoin or Ethereum or Dogecoin or you know, picked something else and was like, okay, this is money now, we're all using it. That wouldn't actually change this robot joust that our marketplaces have become. Yeah. And that's significantly more serious. Because marketplaces have been functioning for centuries, and they do function better when there are stable currencies, and they function worse when there are unstable currencies. But over the previous 8 centuries that we've had the markets that we've had, there's no period of time when they've sort of performed as badly as they have over the last generation or two of humanity. Things like the South Sea bubble or the tulip bulb bubble are famous, but they were sort of once in a century events. Mm-hmm. They weren't, you know, once a decade types scenarios, right, or with like flash crashes. Every single day there is a flash crash. You know, the first big one we publicized, but we don't do that anymore because the computers just do that. Markets have never been this unstable. And the problem isn't that the players in them are greedy criminals. They are certainly greedy, and in some cases are also certainly criminals. But greedy criminals, you know, infesting financial systems have existed for centuries again, and in many cases they've been able to be tolerated. But the technology just means that these systems can't provide the stability that we need out of them anymore, and it's worse to have government financial collusion to loot the treasury which is what we have. But it's not, you know, solving that problem, unfortunately, doesn't solve our problem. Even if we had some supply of genius saints that we sort of like had in our closet that we could pull out and plug into the system itself doesn't work. It'd be like, you know, trying to push a stuck car up a hill if the wheels had been replaced by cinder blocks. It's just like, well, you know, your problem isn't that the car is broken, which it is, or is on a hill, which it is, or that, you know, you're not quite strong enough to push it, which you aren't. Your problem is that it doesn't even have wheels on it. It's, you know, has cinder
blocks. I would just leave the car, frankly.
Right, yes.
So what is the solution? And I know you have a patent that is designed to hedge against this and to stabilize the economy. So tell us about that, if you would.
So my system goes once again to the heart of things and views the markets as communication devices. And the value that they present is the capacity to communicate factual information. And the thing about this factual information is that it's spread out among all of us. We all have parts of the facts, because parts of the facts are what we ourselves want and are capable of. So a farmer or a factory owner has a pretty good idea of what their own unit economics look like. They've got a pretty decent idea, barring some kind of natural disaster, how much, you know, wheat they're going to pull out of the field this year and so on. What they don't know is everything else, how much everyone else is going to make, how much everybody's going to want, all that stuff. And so that's where markets can step in and essentially provide that confederated or integrated information across all of these systems. And so my system essentially creates this kind of two-step thing. The first step is a prediction market in which people can provide their information about where things are heading, up, down, whatever, in a very high rate of return, parimutuel type of a system. And then we can measure how well that's doing by pairing it with a very low cost, high batch trading platform that's using these prices that have been sort of pre-negotiated collectively by everybody. So you can think of it as sort of a bilateral collective bargaining platform, where the people who are in the buying and selling businesses can come together and agree on how prices will evolve and then actually trade based on that price evolution.
Have you spoken with, you know, trading houses or who have you spoken with about possibly having this integrated into their systems? Or
I talk to people all over the world. I've got a handful of sort of irons and fires, a few of which are sort of recently heating up. A couple of crypto plays, a couple of sort of more physical plays. Mostly it's fringe things that are too small to actually be supported by existing markets. So, you know, like the global oil market isn't clamoring to switch out how it does things right now. For this.
Too lucrative.
Yeah. But the thing about intra-market dynamics is that sort of efficiency wins. So if this gets picked up, used, and valued, then because the way that we trade wheat and copper and coal and electricity and, you know, all the other commodities are basically identical to each other, if some new commodity coming up out of the woodwork is being treated in a radically different and radically more efficient way, people can notice and say, oh, look at that. I want some of that. Like, why should mining, you know, magnesium have such a better rate of return than mining iron does, mm-hmm. Just on the finances.
Yeah.
And so there'd be a lot of demand pull once we get moving.
I have a quick question and then, excuse me, and then we'll wrap it up. You know, crypto, blockchains, it's supposed to be this flawless math. And that's part of why it's supposed to work. But what I understand is the quantum computers that are coming out in the next few years are supposed to be able to work faster than the blockchains and can break the blockchains. Is that correct? Do I even understand it correctly?
So quantum can
become corruptible.
Well, yes. So this is a straightforward problem. Actually, it's not so much about the quantum computers or not the quantum computers. Bitcoin is based on a hashing algorithm. We can't break that hashing algorithm. There have been lots of hashing algorithms in the last half century. Most of them have been broken by now. Mm-hmm. Experts generally don't think we're going to break this one within this century. So if you're presently alive, probably you won't be presently alive at a time when Bitcoin stops working.
Yeah.
On that basis. On the other hand, we have no reason to believe that it won't be broken. So whereas something like the US dollar, which arguably has been around for longer than a century, or gold standard currencies, which can be traced back to the Kingdom of Lydia in southern Turkey in like 3000 BC or something. These obviously have far stronger standards than maybe another century. Mm-hmm. There are technological approaches that could help cope and mitigate that issue. But again, that would just be sort of another stage in the political, social, philosophical end of things, which I said, not really their primary focus. More generally, whether or not unbreakable hashes exist is a point of existing research. Mathematics does not know whether or not such things can exist in our universe or can't. Mm-hmm. And in fact, there's some very interesting things that are the consequence of whether or not they can. Essentially, mathematics proved, this is a couple of years now, that trust and understanding are opposite conceptual categories, and only one of them exists in our universe. One of them does exist, but we don't know which one it is. And there's obvious reasons and ongoing research to attempt to establish the existence of both of them. Mm-hmm. So both of those programs might fail. We might never know the answer, and we might only ever be able to create eventually crackable hashing and crypto algorithms. Mm-hmm. Or we may eventually discover that understanding is real, at which point we would never be able to create an uncrackable crypto algorithm ever again. Mm-hmm. Or we may ultimately discover that trust is real, in which case we would be able to create uncrackable crypto algorithms. And human beings can't know what side of that we're on yet. So in many cases, the sort of, you know, techno-futurist people that we see at the heights of society are making claims based on technology that does not exist.
Yeah.
And might, but it doesn't.
Theoretically might, yeah.
Right, yeah. So it's like Elizabeth Holmes, like, you know, wouldn't it be fantastic if instead of going to a doctor, a machine extracted a drop of blood? It's like, well, that would be fantastic. It's right. Not physically possible,
right?
And you didn't do it, but it, yeah, yeah. You know, would be even better than that if I just went to sleep and when I woke up, I was cured.
Like, right. I like it. No, this is such fascinating stuff. Unfortunately, we're kind of running out of time here, but you can find more of Noah Healey at coredisc.com, and that's CoreDisc.com. Noah, do you have anything you want to conclude with? Because it's just such, I mean, we could speak for hours on these things, but.
This was great. Thanks for having me here.
We figured it all out today.
Yeah. Obviously, there are no questions left to humanity. That's right.
We're good.
It's understanding that trust stuff. We're just going to have to learn to live with that.
Yep. Well, thank you, sir. And you have a great day. All right.
Okay. You too. Thanks.
Thanks, Noah. Be well.
Thank you for listening to The Douglas Robbins Show. To find out more about Douglas and his books, check out douglasrobbinsauthor.com.